Truth Seeker. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for joining us here on the Nova M Radio Network. Looks like Air America has been sold. I mentioned that because I was watching Keith Olbermann tonight, and Rachel Maddow was on. I miss Rachel. I really do. What a nice person. Great parents, too. Love her parents. We have a news bulletin that just came in. According to sources, Ted Haggard is still a heterosexual. He still is. We will keep you updated on Ted Haggard's progress as as we get these reports on his sexuality. But he's still heterosexual. There was some doubt there for a while, but everything's cool. Let me see. We have some odd stories for you tonight. Just odd stuff. Insane stuff. Crazy stuff. Every time I turned on CNN today, they were talking about this poor astronaut and her. How many times did they mention today, Kathy, of her 9-hour drive with an adult diaper? I mean, Jesus God. That is just disgusting. Anchor person after anchor person after anchor person on CNN and MSNBC talking about this woman driving. I mean, I started to see this in my mind's eye, her death grip on the wheel, her eyes staring straight through the windshield as she makes her way from Houston to Florida. And she, you know, all of a sudden she said, uh-oh, there's that feeling again. And just keeps driving in this hot, wet sensation. Oh, my God, they kept telling us over and over today. What? And the picture, her mugshot. Oh, Jesus, we have a sick media in this country. Why is this story, why was it not given a little bit of attention on the day it happened? After all, it is an astronaut and then dropped. Two words for you. Gary Condit. Do you remember Gary Condit? Can I see a show of hands? Uh-huh. See? Yeah. Okay. I thought so. Nobody knows who he is. All right. Some of you folks in California do. But you remember Gary Condit? Every single day, 24/7 in this country, back in 2001, all through the summer, every day, he had sex with her. He must have murdered her. He must have dumped her body. Oh, my God. On and on. And then September 11th arrived. And all of a sudden, Gary Condit disappeared. Jake Tapper at ABC News is reporting that the request made by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi for the use, a request for the use of a military plane that can fly to and from her home district in San Francisco without having to stop to refuel, that request has been turned down and the Pentagon has given her the middle finger. That's it. Pentagon officials and the Bush administration have insisted that Madam Speaker used the same plane made available to former Speaker Dennis Jabba the Hutt Hastert, which can make a 700-mile flight to Jabba the Hutt's Aurora, Illinois district easily, but would have to stop to refuel to complete the 2,800-mile trip from D.C. to the San Francisco Bay Area, depending on the headwinds. Pelosi had expressed concern about having to stop and refuel, primarily for security reasons, since 9/11/2001. The Speaker of the House, second in line to presidential succession, behind the cyborg murderer freak Dick Cheney, the Speaker of the House has received what the Air Force refers to as shuttle service, the use of military planes to travel for security reasons. Jesus. No, but she's a Democrat. Now, can you imagine? Let's supposing that, oh, I don't know, some real piece of human excrement like Duncan Hunter, Republican from California, supposing he, by some sick joke perpetrated by the universe. Supposing Duncan Hunter were made Speaker of the House, and he requested, in the first place, he wouldn't request, he would demand, military aircraft to fly him from D.C. To California. Do you think there would be the least bit of hesitation? Why, of course not. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? I haven't. I hate Republicans to the breadth and depth. And what's the other one? Height, length, my soul doth... What is it?
Your liver?
No, that was last night. And I love this story. This is from Miami. A military investigation found no evidence of prisoner abuse after probing allegations that Guantanamo guards, U.S. military personnel, had bragged about beating detainees. That's what the United States Military Southern Command said today. Miami-based Southcom, that's military speak for Southern Command, which oversees U.S. base in Guantanamo Bay, ordered an investigation a couple of months ago after a Marine paralegal reported that sailor guards had boasted in a bar on the base that they routinely beat captives at the detention camp for suspected Al-Qaeda and Taliban operatives. The sailors laughed as they described hitting prisoners, denying them water, revoking privileges for no reason, according to the paralegal. It is Marine Sergeant Heather Cervani. I believe that's how you pronounce her name. She said in an affidavit, from the whole conversation, I understood that striking detainees was a common practice, end quote. Sergeant Cervani visited Guantanamo as part of the military legal team defending Canadian prisoner Omar Khadr, who was charged by a war crimes tribunal with murdering a U.S. medic in a firefight in Afghanistan. She said the sailors were drinking alcohol, but did not seem intoxicated. Investigators said none of the sailors involved would face discipline, but recommended a review of, quote, activities involving alcoholic beverages, end quote, at the base. Oh, P.S., investigators did not question the prisoners. Oh, Christ. But interviewed the suspected guards and witnesses. And they examined records of guards' interaction with prisoners. Southcom said in a news release, quote, the evidence did not support any of the allegations of mistreatment or harassment. Can you imagine somebody showing up at a police station in, oh, I don't know, pick a city, L.A., Detroit, Baltimore, bloodied and beaten up, and says to the best sergeant, or whoever's on duty in charge, I've just been beaten up. Oh, really? Okay. And then didn't ask any questions of the victim? Imagine somebody was raped. How about somebody whose house was set on fire? Somebody who was just burgled. But no. No questions of the alleged victim. God, this country has become perverted. Jesus Christ, we've become perverted in what we consider to be acceptable conduct. Where it concerns military justice, I realize that's an oxymoron, but my God. And what we consider to be justice in general. Totally, totally perverted. Oh, well, there's a reckoning coming, isn't there? Huh? Reckoning coming at some point, somehow? I don't know. Nah, I don't believe that. The National Journal, a right-wing rag of the highest degree, has released a new Congressional Insiders poll. They surveyed 113 members of Congress, 10 Senate Democrats and 48 House Democrats, 10 Senate Republicans and 45 House Republicans. Okay, you got the division there? About 58 Democrats and 55 Senator Republicans about their positions on global warming. The results were startling, absolutely startling. I'll tell you about it when we come back. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy.
making the pie higher. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. One of my college English teachers, I just can't get away from her. She sent me an email. How much do I hate them? Let me count the ways I hate them to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach. Thank you, Reg. All right. They interviewed, National Journal interviewed, surveyed 113 members of Congress, 58 Democrats, House and Senate, 55 Republicans, House and Senate, about their positions on global warming. The results, if I may editorialize, were startling. Only 13% of congressional Republicans say they believe that human activity is causing global warming, compared to 95% of congressional Democrats. Moreover, the number of Republicans who believe in human-induced global warming has actually dropped since April 2006, when the number who believed it was 23%. The question was very simply put to these thugs: do you think it's been proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the Earth is warming because of man-made problems? Jesus, God. Now, since the last survey in April 2006, this has occurred. In June 2006, National Academy of Sciences, an independent organization created by Congress to provide scientific guidance, unequivocally concluded that natural causes cannot explain the unprecedented warmth over the last 400 years. Rather, the report states, quote, human activities are responsible for much of the recent warming, end quote. And then just this month, the IPP, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, concluded for the first time that, quote, global warming is unequivocal and that human activity is the main driver, end quote. Now, regardless of those two reports, belief in the causes of global heating among Republicans in Congress dropped by 10 points. Christ almighty. And a lot of people say, well, you're too hard on Republicans, or some of these snotty little conservatives that call this program every once in a while with their naked ignorance, don't like the fact that I think Republicans are just half-wits, not even that, quarter-wits. What's worse than a half-wit? 13%. Oh, my God. Why don't you people just go, I don't know, why don't they believe it? Somebody said because they believe that only God can do something like this, that man has no power. This is all God doing it. Why don't you people take your Bibles and your tambourines and your bags of snakes and just go away? Leave us normal people. Why don't you resign from Congress? Imagine this. Imagine the fate of the earth hangs to a large degree on what happens in this country. We are, what, 8% of the population on the planet, or 6%, and we contribute 25% of the filth that goes into the air. So you can make the argument, for the time being, eventually China and India will catch up with us, but hopefully China and India will have enough sense, the leaders will have enough sense to realize that they have got to not follow our lead where it concerns continuing to pollute. We're 300 million. China's 1.2 billion. India's 1 billion. I mean, if those populations, those societies do what we've done, we're screwed. That's it. It's all over. Goodbye, human race. The Chinese and the Indians hopefully do not have a Rush Limbaugh or a Newt Gingrich or a Sean Hannity or a Fox News channel or Republicans. In those countries, somebody makes statements that are so asinine, they are usually taken out behind the nearest wall and executed before they can pollute the rest of society. Ah. 13% of Republicans. Okay. There's a group called Americans Against Escalation in Iraq, AAEI. It is calling on this Republican pissant, Senator Larry Craig, Republican of Idaho, to apologize for the behavior of his chief of staff, the chief of staff berated a group of veterans, according to the group. Members of VoteVets.org visited Craig's office yesterday to voice their opposition to Bush's plan to add more troops to Iraq. Veterans. They met with Craig's chief of staff, a little candy ass named Mike Ware, who ended up yelling at them. In a local news report, Larry Craig's office characterized the incident as a, quote, vibrant discussion, end quote. The AAEI, Americans Against Escalation in Iraq, called the exchange an affront to all veterans. A spokeswoman for AAEI said it is deplorable and unpatriotic that Senator Craig would tolerate his top aide treating these brave men who fought for their country in Iraq with hostility and disrespect. How soon before you think Senator Larry Craig, Republican of Idaho, will apologize?
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
We are a rock revolving around a golden sun.
Isn't that pathetic?
We are a billion children rolled.
It's just pathetic. I love this story out of Olympia, Washington, an initiative that this group is trying to get on the ballot for the next election, Initiative 957. It's been filed by proponents of same-sex marriage, and it would require that heterosexual couples must have children within 3 years or else have their marriage annulled. The group is called the Defense of Marriage Alliance. The group was formed last summer after the state Supreme Court upheld the state of Washington's ban on same-sex marriage. Under this initiative, marriage would be limited to men and women who are able to have children. Couples would be required to prove they can have children in order to get a marriage license. And if they did not have children within 3 years, their marriage would be subject to annulment. All other marriages would be defined as unrecognized, and people in those marriages would be ineligible to receive any marriage benefits. Now, This makes perfect sense, because for years, these right-wing pissants in this country, the social conservatives, have claimed that marriage exists solely for the purpose of procreation, right? So the head of the Washington Defense of Marriage Alliance, Gregory Gadow, in a printed statement said, quote, "The time has come for these conservatives to be dosed with their own medicine. If same-sex couples should be barred from marriage because they cannot have children together, it follows that all couples who cannot or will not have children together should equally be barred from marriage." Hear, hear. Now, supporters of this have to gather about 250,000 valid signatures by July 6th to put the initiative on the November ballot. Opponents to this, the right-wing half-wits, say the measure is another attack on traditional marriage. I was doing just fine with my old lady. I really was. Jesus, God. Nobody complained when I beat the hell out of her. Nobody complained when I forced her to stay home and clean up the house. Nobody complained when I had my girlfriends on the side. But then this queer couple moved into the neighborhood, and wouldn't you know it, the bitch filed for divorce. God, I hate these people. I hate them to the breadth and depth and height my soul doth reach. This is from God, I don't know. I don't know who it's from. Hi, Mike. I've been wondering. I keep hearing about the incredible size of the Afghanistan poppy crop. I have heard things from enough to supply the entire world's heroin supply to even more than that. I have never heard anyone ask the following question. My question is this. How do the pharmaceutical companies make drugs like Oxycontin and Oxycodone? Do they have to start with poppies? Our country is being ravaged in the midst of all the other devastating events that are happening with an epidemic of abuse of these drugs, Oxycontin and Oxycodone. And I almost never hear about it in the mainstream media. It makes me wonder, do you know anything about this or your listeners? Is anyone asking this question? I have no idea. I really don't. I have no idea. It's a good question, though. And this is from Ariel. She or he, well, Ariel, I guess, is a she. She writes in the subject line, I'm through with, quote, support the troops, end quote. She writes, it is high time we leftists stop cringing like the Wicked Witch of the West under a leaky pail of water at the sound of the bellow, don't you support the troops? Hell, I support the astronauts, but when that crazy lady took off from Texas in her diapers with a metal mallet and rubber tubing, I stopped supporting her. I'm sure the good Germans were reminded to support the Luftwaffe when they took off for Poland, too. My point is, when it comes to launching tomahawks into the civilian population of a country that hasn't done squat to us, it's time to draw the line. It's time to exhort the troops. Do what the handful of your comrades like Lieutenant Watada have and refuse orders that are immoral, murderous, violate international law and basic human decency. Gentlemen of the brass, stage a coup if you have to. But you support the troops. Don't transmit illegal orders, and don't court-martial the real heroes who refuse to massacre innocents at the whim of the deranged clique of fascists. Yes, I will go there, back to Nam. My dad was an Air Force officer who did two tours in Saigon. Want to know who my heroes are? The guys who went to Canada and jail.
I was just obeying orders.
Tell that to the judges at Nuremberg or The Hague. Tell that, troops, to the mirror. Tell it to your God when you meet him. Well, Ariel, thanks for the email. In testimony before the Senate yesterday, Defense Secretary Robert Gates argued that the so-called surge is not the last chance for Iraq. However, previously, pro-escalation Senators Mitch McConnell, Red Ass of Kentucky, and Lindsey Graham, Rat Fink of South Carolina, had said this is the last chance. But Gates rejected that view in Washington that the Bush administration's decision to send these troops to Iraq is the last chance to succeed. Gates said, quote, I would be responsible if I weren't thinking about what the alternatives might be, and this surge is not the last chance. He was there to defend the war budget of $500 billion and another $141 billion in supplemental funding. They all lie. Lindsey Graham is a punk. Mitch McConnell is I don't know what he is. Not that there's anything wrong with being a cross-dresser, but you know he is. He's like J. Edgar Hoover used to be. You know that when Mitch McConnell goes home to Kentucky on Thursday afternoon, as soon as he gets in the door of his house, he puts on a girdle and a bra and a nice dress and heels and a wig and does his makeup, puts on his pearls, and goes out to dinner with his wife. You know he does! Not that there's anything wrong with that. Is there? And U.S. Marine General Peter Pace, testifying before the Senate Armed Services Committee yesterday, said, there's not enough equipment in Iraq for a surge. During testimony over this massive expenditure of death weapons, Pace said the military has about 41,000 armored vehicles in Iraq, fewer than will be needed, quote, to cover all of the troops that are deploying, end quote. So what's the solution? Pace said it would be July before enough equipment is in place. So what's the solution? He said, quote, the commanders on the ground have talked with the chief of staff of the Army and the commandant of the Marine Corps and have agreed that they will be able to share trucks. Well, the way they put it was share the assets on the ground so that no soldier or Marine will leave the compound without proper protection. You know, you guys ought to forget about the trucks and start thinking about the helicopters that are starting to be shot out of the sky with alarming regularity. Huh? Couple more things here. From thinkprogress.org, the Department of Homeland Security refuses to cooperate on oversight activities, according to testimony offered today by the General Accounting Office, Comptroller General David Walker, and the Homeland Security Inspector General Richard Skinner. These two investigators highlighted the role of Philip Perry. He's the chief counsel of the Department of Homeland Security and Dick Cheney's son-in-law. Both of these investigators say he, Philip Perry, is the major stumbling block in their investigations as to the crap, corruption, fraud, wasted money, theft, all of it in the Department of Homeland Security. Comptroller General David Walker said the Department of Homeland Security strategy in dealing with investigations is to, quote, delay, 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 end quote. He went on to say, Homeland Security has been one of our persistent access challenges. Nobody will answer questions. Walker said the problem is systemic and not the fault of any single individual, but he complained that the General Accounting Office has had to go through the office of Chief Counsel Philip Perry, who's married to Elizabeth Cheney. Walker said it is his understanding that Perry's office reviews documents that the GAO seeks before they are released and that Perry selectively sits in on interviews with department employees and that investigations have been hindered and stopped. How much longer, True Seekers?
To border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Ten before the hour. Back to this Cheney son-in-law, who is the go-to guy where it concerns investigations into the corruption at the Department of Homeland Security, which is, you know, the biggest government agency put together since the Defense Department, and it was it is a hopeless sink of corruption, filth, incompetence, lies, deceit. It's horrifying, and the Republicans put this together. This is Dick Cheney's personal slush fund and political slush fund and money slush fund. It's filthy. It's like a nest of maggots, just a huge, imagine a huge ball of maggots about the size of an average office building. And that's the Department of Homeland Security. Who in the hell are they securing? They have done nothing except steal, lie, cheat, defraud. Well, they did a great job with Rita and Katrina down in the Mississippi Gulf Coast, didn't they? Really good job there, guys.
Tell me again how the Republicans are the party of small government. Didn't they want this thing?
Nah, Republicans are the party of disease and death. The Homeland Security Inspector General Richard Skinner said that he is experiencing the same problem as the Comptroller General David Walker. Skinner, who said his office is oftentimes told who they can interview, and then it takes weeks to get documents. Skinner said he prepared a document last summer to inform all department employees of the Inspector General's responsibilities and encourage them to cooperate. And he said that letter has been sitting up in Skinner's office. Philip Perry. It's been sitting in Cheney's son-in-law, Philip Perry's office, since June or July of 06. The latest semi-annual report from the Inspector General, Skinner, highlighted what is referred to as a litany of staff misconduct, immigration officials demanding sex in exchange for visas, airport screeners stealing money from tourist luggage, federal air marshals smuggling drugs, and employees from various Department of Homeland Security agencies committing sex crimes. Jesus Christ. And it's all overseen by Philip Perry, Dick Cheney's son-in-law. Drug smuggling, theft, sex in exchange for visas, and sex crimes. God, I'm afraid to ask what the sex crimes are. That's your Department of Homeland Security. Yeah, that's your Department of Homeland Security. Now, if you don't think that's bad enough, this is not new. This is not new. The Justice Department investigation that criticized FBI agents for taking souvenirs from the World Trade Center site also found that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and a high-ranking FBI official kept items from the September 11th attack scenes. The Associated Press obtained a copy of the report. And the final investigatory report said the Justice Department Inspector General confirmed Rumsfeld, quote, has a piece of the airplane that flew into the Pentagon, end quote. Pentagon spokes thug Lawrence DeRita said that Rumsfeld, yeah, has a shard of metal from the jetliner that struck the Pentagon on a table in his office. DeRita said he doesn't consider it his own. We are mindful of the fact that if somebody has an evidentiary requirement to have the shard of metal, we will provide it to them. The Justice Department investigation also collected testimony that Pasquale D'Amoro, FBI Director Robert Mueller's Executive Assistant Director for Terrorism, asked a supervisory agent to, quote, obtain a half dozen items from the World Trade Center debris so the items could be given to dignitaries. Surviving family members were surprised by all this. William Doyle, whose son was killed at the World Trade Center, said, unbelievable. The Justice Department's report has not been officially released, but heavily deleted versions of the report began circulating around Washington, showing 13 FBI agents had taken rubble, debris, and items such as flags and a Tiffany Crystal Globe paperweight. Now, this came out 2.5 years ago. Rumsfeld. And you wonder why I call these people ghouls and vampires and eaters of the dead. I don't know. Would you do that? Would you take a shard of metal? Would you steal something from a death site? Would you do that? What would you do? Would you be like Rumsfeld and say, hey, come here, I want to show you something. Look at this. This is what I have here is, see, he always pounds something when he talks. This is this is a hand. You'll notice all the skin has been burned off and the ligaments are missing, but I got this out here on the front lawn where the nod, nod, wink, wink, nudge, nudge jetliner hit the Pentagon. What do I use it for? It's a paperweight. I think, you know, a couple of decades ago, we used baby skulls from El Mazote, a village. What? You already know about that? Yeah, we had baby skulls back then. Now we use hand bones. Jesus, I hope nobody finds out about this. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. In answer to my question about, or not my question, but the emailer's question about the production of OxyContin and oxycodone and the opium poppy in Afghanistan, Lauren writes in, 25% of these drugs is produced by a French company. Much of the pharmaceutical stuff is grown in India. Some also is grown in Tasmania. So there you go. She writes, there is a suggestion that using the Afghan stuff for legal pharmaceuticals could solve some problems. And Seth, flight crew training instructor, what the Chinese have, we're talking about global warming and you know, the fact that the Chinese surely don't want to follow the lead of the United States. And Seth writes, what the Chinese have are 8 very accomplished engineers directing the country. The reason they have stated the goal of landing men on the moon and colonizing it is because of the almost unlimited presence of helium-3 on the lunar surface. Helium-3 is a nearly clean energy source that would replace nearly every fossil fuel application on Earth. Is it any wonder that the Bush administration has concurrently stated that they will, quote, vigorously and aggressively, end quote, defend the U.S. interests in space? Now, I've never heard of this, but if you want to go to wikipedia.org and type in helium-3 or helium-3, go to the online encyclopedia, wikipedia.org, helium-3. Very interesting. Thanks, Seth. I was reading that during the break. We're going to do some phone calls here, but I thought I would share this with you as much as I can. Greg in San Antonio wrote it. I frequently say on this program, and I said it last night repeatedly, apparently I didn't know where to turn, what to do, and Greg writes, now check it out, just listen. Last night I finished a short paper that looked at how the journal Public Opinion Quarterly handled the rise of Hitler, the assassination of JFK, and the attacks of 9/11. What occurred to me as you were in mid-rant discussing your liver bile duct issues was that what these reptiles are actually doing to us. The idea is to create so much psychic noise, so much overwhelming sensory input, that our only way of operating is to resort to filtering information through our personal biases. No higher order thinking, no weighing of alternatives, no mammalian brain feedback loops. In other words, everybody gets polarized from everyone else. Massive traumatizing events, MTEs. Everyone's judgment gets screwed up because there's no way to process trauma. By definition, the overload is not processed and is, in fact, injurious to the victims of the MTE. Everyone divides up from everyone else as personal prejudices are the only processors operating in the forebrain. The mammalian part of the brain has been turned off. I heard a rumor that the Nazi scientists we imported after World War II learned about this crap from the Jews they experimented on. Victims became so overwhelmed that they just started drooling, curling up in the fetal position, and lapsing into catatonic states of consciousness. How is it used? Everybody is talking about the war in Iraq, the threat of war with Iran. Nobody is talking about Professor Stephen Jones' research study on the steel souvenirs these bastards deigned to offer up to all the places that wanted a piece of the World Trade Center to put in their memorials. The rest of the crime scene was sent to China in barges. Meanwhile, we have Silverstein on camera admitting that they demolished the World Trade Center Building 7 on 9/11 on his orders. Yeah, I know. I didn't make the connection right away either, because that's what trauma does to the human nervous system and the mammalian brain. You can't demolish any building unless you plan it in advance. And if they planned to demolish WTC 7 at some point in the future, they could just as easily have planned to demolish both towers in advance, way in advance. And as Dr. Jones examined the leftover steel, he found traces of sulfur and thermite remains in the steel. He saw steel beams sheared off at angles in news camera reports filmed right after the collapses, just like demolitions. He saw the orange hot liquid steel flowing out of the edges of the tower prior to the collapse on these films as well. The 9/11 Commission claimed that this was aluminum. But aluminum gets shiny when it melts. It doesn't turn orange. I could go on and on, but you get the point. 9/11 was political theater, just as the Reichstag fire was in 1933. Execute a massively traumatizing event against the people and watch them scatter like so many ants in a rainstorm. And my point? They're keeping us all off balance with this criminal behavior on purpose. No one can agree on anything because we're all suffering from the effects of post-traumatic stress disorder. Massively traumatizing events do on a public level what trauma does to individuals. The difference is that vast numbers of people experience post-traumatic stress disorder all at the same time. What we need to be thinking about is the fact that any government with the temerity to murder 3,000 of its own people in a single atrocity couldn't care less about ethical or moral behavior. These are just modern conveniences to these monsters. Just as the Kennedy assassination scattered people all over the political map, so too has the 9/11 event scattered the brains of everyone in this country. The social fabric has been ripped to shreds by criminally traumatizing behavior. So, nothing. Absolutely nothing that these people have done since 9/11 has been under the aegis of legitimate governance. Iraq's a quagmire? Imagine my shock. I realize that few want to talk about the events of 9/11 because they were so horrifying and soul-sucking, but we gotta. We return to the point of departure from ordinary reality and recreate and reclaim our distorted memories so that we can reclaim our lives and our country back from those who have tried to steal it from us. Greg in San Antonio sent that email. Well, yeah, but there's always the auditions for American Idol, Greg, you know, which takes care of my massively traumatizing event. No, I'm being half-wittedly facetious. Greg is right. We haven't been able to think clearly, have we, since September 11, 2001? We really haven't. We really, really haven't. And you know what? I question, I don't know if that's the subtext of Greg's email, but I question whether we ever will be able to critically analyze anything that this particular government does. But looking forward to any government in this country, really? Isn't that a possibility? A possibility to be able to After 6 years, on top of the events of September 11, 2001, we've had 6 years of utter, absolute, total, complete lies about everything. I defy anyone to call this program, I don't care if you're right, left, liberal or conservative, and start talking to me in clearly definable terms about what is going on in this country. You don't know anymore, neither do I. Nor does anyone. Anyone who claims they do is either a fool or a liar. The entire country is saturated. We are neck deep. All right, we are eyebrow deep in lies. Lies that have destroyed the country, destroyed the economy, destroyed our reputation, and taken us into a war. Oh, I know a lot of people say, what are you talking about? Destroy the economy. I'm doing better than I ever have. Yeah, you probably are. And enjoy the ride, really, because you're heading towards a brick wall at about 180 miles an hour. That's not Daytona. That's where you're heading. But nobody can. It is an utter impossibility to talk. You know, I try to tune in to Keith Olbermann after I put Molly to sleep at night, before we come on the air, just for some link to reality. And even Keith is having a hard time, or at least I perceive that he's having a hard time. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's doing just fine. But I defy anyone to try to link up with reality in this country right now and call this program and discuss any issue from a real... Oh. We'll be back after the break.
After Secretary of State Powell's presentation to the United Nations Security Council, the world knows that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction.
All right, I've got an important announcement here from our technical department. For real, this is for real. From Nova M Radio Network Technical Department. This is for the streaming internet listeners. The free live stream has been upgraded. So starting tomorrow, you'll need to go back to the Nova M Radio website and get an updated link to the new improved stream, okay? No. Doesn't cost you anything, you know. No charge, okay? It's just a new improved link, but you, a stream, but you need to go back and get it, all right? So don't forget, when you try to log on tomorrow night, go, oh! Remember, Malloy told you, okay? I'll remind you again. It'll be pointless to remind people tomorrow night because the people who would need... Never mind. Let's do some phone calls. You want to do that? Yes, indeed, let's do it. R.W. is calling from Chattanooga. Hey, R.W.
Donkashin, man.
Hey.
Listened on that stream, and you and Free Speech Television and a few other things are a lifeline.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for saying that.
And our next check comes in, we plan to become founders.
I like that part, too.
I call about something else, but you brought up the helium-3, and I don't know if you want to talk about that or not. It's kind of a little scary what they're... Well, I don't know.
Well, I don't know anything about it.
It's also called tritium.
Oh, now tritium I've heard of. That's radioactive, isn't it?
It is a... It's an isotope... Well, that's why it's called helium-3. It's an isotope of normal... of hydrogen.
Yeah.
And... no, wait, he said helium-3. No, we're talking about helium, not hydrogen.
Right. Helium-3.
Oh, okay, I could be wrong then. It's not tritium. Tritium is hydrogen.
Oh, okay.
But it is something that we do use in nuclear weapon systems. And
yeah, tritium 3, I think, is a byproduct of a thermonuclear blast, a hydrogen bomb, isn't it?
Yeah, we make a little bit of both of them in nuclear weapons, and we use tritium in triggers. I may be off on my little thing, but anyways, my point is, and I'm a space nut, okay, I'll say that. I think we ought to be out there colonizing and getting off this, you know, this rock, trying to, you know, spread our eggs out, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if I want to strip mine the moon, and that's what we're, what they're going to be talking about here if they have to get into that.
Well, we're doing it here. Oh, never mind. What about the astronaut who had a major freak out and apparently tried to do bodily harm to somebody? Do you have any comments on that?
I don't know what to think about that. That was just bizarre. But I'm like you. You know, it's like, you know, it you know, they're going to drag it out, and you know, as more distraction. But I called. I was wanting to talk, since you're in the media business.
Oh, okay.
This impending merger with Citadel and apparently some ABC stations. Why in the world is ABC going off the right wing deep end anyway? I mean, I was listening to our local WGOP. If you know the station, I won't mention its real call letters.
Right.
That, you know, it's like this afternoon, every commercial they were running was like Glenn Beck, or Glenn Dreck, I should say, pitching this, pitching that, and it's like, you know, and you know they're doing all this other white right-wing nonsense. What happened to Disney and ABC, and is this consolidation of right-wing power?
I'm not sure what really is going on, whether it's an ideological... a complete ideological move now in this country to Nazism, to fascism, or if it's just a matter of money. And again, it was the expression, and once again tonight I've forgotten who said it, it wasn't Chomsky, fascism is capitalism with guns. And whatever is going on, and something is going on, the consolidation of media, it's getting to the point where it is damn near impossible, unless you're really willing to work hard to get your message out. The network that I'm working for, Nova M Radio, you would think that by this point in its existence that we would be on 100, 200 radio stations. We are lucky to be on 15, at 12 at the present time. Let me put you on hold, RW. I'll come back in a second. I got to take a break here. We will take a break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
About 25 before the hour, we're talking with RW in Chattanooga. All right, you had asked me about consolidation of media. It's either money or right-wing politics. I happen to think it's probably a combination of both. There's never going to be a time, ever again when over-the-air broadcasting will be as diverse as it was, say, 15 years ago.
I hope you're wrong with that, but I don't know how we're going to get around.
No. It's just not going to happen, RW. There will be alternative forms of broadcasting. I'm sure there will be satellite broadcasting. We already have two up there, Sirius and XM.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are going to be more. There will be internet broadcasting. There's always shortwave. But as far as your standard over-the-air broadcast, it's no longer the public airwaves. They belong to the media companies. There's no such thing as a sense of responsibility on how the airwaves are used. Hell, just listen to this program. This is the most out-of-control program that you're going to hear on the airwaves. I stopped just short of advocating murdering everybody. What has happened is, thanks to Reagan and Clinton, this has happened. It was Reagan who came up with deregulation, and it was Clinton that came up with signed consolidation. So here we are. You know, and again, I started to say that's why this network is struggling right now. I think we'll make it. You know, we get 50 stations signed up, we've made it.
Yeah.
We get 5,000 founders, we've made it. But you take a look at somebody like Amy Goodman. She's on, on the Pacifica affiliates and a few independents around the country. Amy Goodman's program is arguably, and I'm not talking about all of her points of view. A lot of her points of view I don't agree with. But her program is arguably one of the most intense that you're going to find on radio. And she struggles to be on six or seven stations.
Yeah.
So it's just, radio especially is not about information. It's about entertainment. It's about putting you to sleep. It's the little stepsister of television. Television is supposed to make us forget. Radio is supposed to put us to sleep.
I think it's so important, though, that, and I understand where you're coming from, that we try to make an effort to bring radio back, because there's so many people out there who don't know where to go for the stuff on the net, who can't get on the net. I'm lobbying a local station right now to try to get Scott Ritter on, because to talk about this impending war with Iran.
Right.
Because these people need to be woken up, and I think you could. But it is a fight. It is a struggle, and I think people need to lobby their local affiliates and say, hey, get Mike Malone on, get Tom Hartman on, try to carry some of these columnists in the local paper. Mm-hmm. And can I put a plug out for McChesney's recent organization?
Yeah.
Well, they recently just had that National Conference on Media Reform in Memphis, and
right.
It was a great thing. And if you're they discuss a lot of things about how to lobby the media and how to, become more proactive and try to get the word out to people. Mm-hmm. And it's on at www.freepress.net/conference. Mm-hmm. That's a forward slash, and there's archives of all the talks and stuff there.
freepress.net/conference.
Yeah, /conference. And they got archives of the speeches and all the work sessions, audio of the work of the various sessions. And, they discuss things like going, about the public, the FCC file and filing comments before the FCC on their rules proposals that come up and all these kind of things that, we need to get more active in our, just in our media as well as our democracy.
Well, I don't disagree with that. And if the FCC ever becomes what it was supposed to be, the regulatory agency that made sure that the airwaves were being used in a responsible manner
mm-hmm.
for the American public, then such a thing as you're suggesting may come to pass. But when the FCC is run by political hacks whose job is to stifle competition, whose job is to stifle discussion or varying points of view, then it simply won't happen. So there's a step-by-step process. I think it's great to have conferences to teach people how to lobby media, but and that's effective. Sometimes you win. Most of the time you don't. But if you really want to change standard mainstream media, then the Federal Communications Commission has got to be totally changed, and it's got to be changed to the extent that never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, can there be political hacks appointed there ever again, like, for example, Colin Powell's son.
That was ridiculous.
Oh, just an outrage, just an absolute outrage. So while I agree with what you're saying, RW, and I certainly don't want anyone to give up. There's got to be a struggle. The struggle is just beginning. Part of the struggle, as a matter of fact, the beginning of the struggle has to be to get the FCC back to where it is a regulatory agency that protects the interests of the American public.
Well, Mike, we've got two good commissioners on there, Copps and Adelstein up there. Copps got a standing ovation, and when they had their hearings on media consolidation, when he gave his little tirade up in Nashville. I guess we're just going to have to wait till maybe the next administration. Hopefully we get that third commissioner in there. But
or change how these commissioners are appointed. If I'm not mistaken, they're presidential appointments, but they run for 6 years?
I'm not sure.
I don't know either. And but there has to be a way to remove the politics from so much that the Bush crime family and the Clinton administration and the Reagan crime family, what they did by politicizing damn near everything. Clinton did it because he felt like he was triangulating, whatever the term was, and getting the job done. Reagan and Bush 1 and Bush 2 have done it because they are right-wing ideologues who don't give a tinker's damn about the marketplace of ideas or discussion or dissent, surely not dissent, or fair play, or giving everyone an equal chance. That's not what Republicans are about. They never have been. They never will be. And going forward, it's just off the table. So,
well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say Republicans have got to be reduced further and further and further until they are a minority party. I hope the Greens step in. I hope eventually the Republican Party disappears like the Whigs did, and then it'll be a contest between Democrats and Greens, and Democrats can become the new Republicans.
Yeah.
But they won't be quite as filthy as the current Republican Party. And I hope the Greens or an independent party of some other stripe, although I tend to lean toward the Greens philosophically, I hope that they will make sure that this doesn't happen again. Now, this all depends on you and me and the other 300 million of us being active. You think that'll happen? You think it'll happen?
I don't know. I'm seeing the signs of hopefully, and I think there are signs that the Republicans have reduced themselves to a regional Southern party, which is helpful. But I'm like you. I'm kind of worried about the blue dogs in charge of the Democrats right now. Even now, they're still trying to triangulate. They still can't get the message. But like you said about the importance of the new media, everybody out there, find out about what net neutrality is, get involved and get active, tell your people we need to keep the net free, because they're introducing bills all the time about trying to take out our rights on the internet and all that. And it is a valuable, it's no replacement for media, for radio, I don't think, but it is a valuable
yeah.
media.
Yeah, for sure. All right, RW, thank you. Always good to hear from you. Don't hear from you enough. Take care, okay?
All right.
All right, sir. Appreciate it. Bob is calling from Detroit. Bob, welcome to the program. Yo, Bob.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Just wanting to get your take. There's been something. I remember about a month ago seeing Dianne Feinstein talking on the Senate floor about these United States attorneys that are getting sacked by the Gonzalez Justice Department.
Yeah, it's still going on.
Yeah, yesterday I'm watching the news, and on the bottom, you know, ticker, I see that a U.S. attorney from Arkansas just got canned, and his replacement is a Karl Rove crony.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. There are two events that have occurred in the past week that kind of went in below the radar, so to speak. What you're talking about, the firing of these attorneys and replacement of these federal attorneys by political hacks, loyal to Cheney and Rove. That's A. B. The other thing has occurred in addition to the appointing of these attorneys is the appointing of what amounts to a political commissar. This is very much like the Soviet Union, that will sit in on observer. And a decider on every one of the regulatory agencies, like the Federal Trade Commission, the Food and Drug Administration, the FCC, the Bureau of Mines. These will all be political appointees whose job is simply to make sure that the party line, and the party line is corporate America's party line, is being followed by these regulatory agencies. This is exactly, except it's a mirror image, of what the Soviets did. So those two events, the firing and the continued removal of these federal attorneys, whose job it is to, they have tremendous power to investigate, to bring evidence before grand juries, to indict. Look at Fitzgerald, the guy who has brought Libby to trial. All these they're federal attorneys, they have tremendous power for justice or tremendous power for corruption.
Right, Mike, and you know what I really find comical is when you hear Republicans talk about how rotten and terrible government is, and they've exceeded as far, you know, I mean, they've made the biggest government, you know, probably in my lifetime.
Yes.
I'm only 37. But they... you know, they talk about government as being so bad and so awful and should stay out of the people's business, but, you know, they don't, but police officers and firefighters are funded by the government. So I guess we should do away with all of those.
Well, they're hypocrites, liars, snakes, thieves, and killers. Bob, you and I agree with that. I got to go. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back.
Hey, neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Just hold on. Hold on. We're going to come get your phone calls. Next hour is nothing but phone calls. But I want you to hear some of the sound here from Tony Snow today. Keeping in mind, this is on Overman's program tonight, that at the recent rich folks meeting in Davos, Switzerland, Rupert Murdoch, the neo-Nazi who runs Fox News Channel and all sorts of newspapers and television and media empires around the planet, admitted that Fox in this country did everything they could to gin up support for the war in Iraq. Fair and balanced, my ass. Rupert Murdoch should be removed from the position that he's in my opinion. But this has to do with what RW was talking about. As long as you have people like Rupert Murdoch running media companies, you will never, ever, ever, ever even get a whisper of a free press ever again. And fair and balanced, oh, give me a break. Like Oberman said, why not call it orange and purple? So, ever the spinmeister, Tony Snow won't even admit the helicopter that was shot down today was actually shot down today. This is how Fox News works. Reporter says, what can you tell us about the helicopter that was shot down?
No. Again, preliminary reports indicate mechanical,
well, okay,
perhaps. But, again, we don't have firm word on it, and the place to go for a real answer is the Department of Defense.
Oh, thanks. That's the Department of the Defense. Yeah, okay. Preliminary reports indicate mechanical, perhaps. Maybe it was little mischievous elves. You son of a bitch. So how close is the Bush crime family to their supposed goal of getting a unified Iraqi government in place, one that can act as a partner in peace with U.S. against terrorism? doesn't look good. The reporter says, Tony, are you concerned that a member of the Iraqi parliament appears to be the same guy that was convicted of those embassy bombings back in 83?
The one thing we've made clear with the Iraqi government and the prime minister's made clear is that you have to have a situation now where you have a government that's committed to peace and people are operating outside the law, committing acts of violence. You need to deal with them, but I'm not going to render judgment on the story.
What? You have a government that's committed to peace. How is it committed to peace if it contains known terrorists who bombed U.S. and French embassies? I'm sorry, Tony. I think I'm confused. No, I guess I'm not confused. Never mind. That's right. Fox News Channel. You all know this story, don't you, Truth Seeker? One of the higher-ups in the Iraqi government is a convicted terrorist bomber? Well, maybe that's, I don't know, is that good or bad? The next reporter asks if we have any moral obligation to take care of all the refugees we are creating from our illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq. Fair question. The reporter says, does the United States, Tony, have moral obligation to refugees from the war in Iraq, which there are now a couple of million displaced and in camps in Syria and Jordan? And if so, why have we accepted so few into the U.S.? I think we've accepted under 500 so far.
I don't know if it's a moral obligation, but it is certainly an obligation that we think is important to take up. I think to the extent that we believe there's a moral obligation to reach out to those who've been displaced around the globe, and the United States is usually
what?
The first to the scene, we certainly are interested in trying to work with regional partners to deal with those who are there. We're also trying to work with the Iraqis to create better conditions on the ground.
Really? Create better conditions on the ground? All I see is how we're creating worse conditions on the ground, Tony, but never mind. That's just me. I'm a liberal Democrat American. He says, I don't know if it's a moral obligation. This moral midget talks as if the United States has no more obligation to these war refugees than we do to the victims of Darfur. Oh, my God. It is so disgusting. It is so disgusting to know what we're doing and to listen to the people who represent this government when they try to justify their crimes. Unbelievable. I love this one. Snow calls Al Gore silly. Over Gore's charge that the Bush crime family would pay scientists to alter their findings on global warming to suit their corporate masters. You know, the oil companies. Yeah, how crazy would it be for the White House to pay a reporter like Armstrong Williams to report a fake story or shape the data like the Iraq weapons of mass destruction to fit a planned policy or use fake TV reporters to film fake news reports about a topic and then send them to news organizations to play on their local nightly news as if it was a locally produced story? Nah, that would never happen with the administration of ethics and honesty, would it? The reporter says, Tony, do you have any reaction to some apparent comments by Al Gore in Spain in an interview where he suggested that the administration was paying scientists to dispute the global warming findings?
The reported remarks by the vice president that the United States, that the government is going out and paying money to those who dispute climate change research is just breathtakingly silly. I think maybe what he's done is he's mixed up a story about a think tank in Washington with government policy. As I've said, this administration has spent more money than his administration and any other administration when it comes to doing serious, peer-reviewed scientific researches on the nature, causes, and extent of global warming.
Oh, my God. Is your nose is going to grow just like Pinocchio. He says, as I've said, this administration has spent more money than his administration. Yeah, of course you have. In bribes! We spent more money than Clinton Gore did and any other administration when it comes to doing serious, peer-reviewed by ExxonMobil, scientific researches, internets, researches. Breathtakingly silly. Breathtakingly silly, huh? Two words for you, Tony Armstrong Williams, who, by the way, my friends at Air America are locked into working on in New York City, the station that people like Sam and Randy and Rachel and all the people at Air America, they have to share airtime with this pissant Armstrong Williams, who is committed to the radio station that all the Air America talent appears on in New York City. Can you imagine that? But hey, it's the free marketplace, right? Ah, everybody in New York wants to hear Armstrong Williams. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on Nova M Radio Network. Brought to you also on Sirius Satellite Radio. Program note, we will not be here Friday or all of next week. So if you tune in Friday, we will have live substitute host, though. Do you know who it is? I think I've already gotten the memo on it, but I'm drawing a blank. I will let you know tomorrow night. We'll be gone Friday and all of next week. So when you tune in Friday and you don't hear the dulcet tones of your humble and obedient servant here, it's not because Nova M has pulled an Air America on me, simply because we're taking a week off. Ron in Wellsboro wrote this vis-a-vis the lengthy email I read you from Gregory about massively traumatizing events, and nobody can think anymore. Ron writes, Mike, what a spot-on analysis, that last email you read. But also, doesn't it seem like what is happening now is the culmination of a good 30-40-year push, or is that pooch, to incrementally de-industrialize America and so destroy the union movement and the middle class's ability to protect democracy? For if you pull the rug out from people enough times, you can convince them to accept the small change until there's nothing left of this grand experiment. And here we sit, spun. Punch drunk from debt and broken dreams, wondering what in the hell our children will have to live through. The horror, to quote Mr. Conrad. Hell, the Bushes and Harrimans have had this thing in the works probably since the last madman made a play to enslave the earth. Bastards. Finally, I want to chime in with the person last night who said it's time to storm the Bastille. Ron in Wellsboro. It is very difficult to be someone who still practices critical or analytical thinking, isn't it? You know what I'm talking about. I do it, so do you. It's becoming more and more difficult because the further you go into critical and or analytical thinking, in order to make decisions you must make, and you realize that the power that resides way above you, I realize this every day, is not engaged in the same sort of analysis. Not at all. It's engaged in religious or ideological or political snotballs. It's garbage. It's crap. But in most societies, unless there's a revolution, the decisions come top down. They don't arise bottom up unless there's a revolution. They come top down. And what we've always relied on, haven't we, ever since tribalism, we've relied on the top-down people, the people up there at the top who are handing down the decisions to be, to some degree, honest, forthright, thinking about the welfare of the tribe or the city or the state or the nation. Right? Hasn't that always kind of been the contract between the governed and the governors? Okay, you can govern us, but do it right. And if you don't, we will rise up and murder you, like we have done so many times in the history of the human race, going back to the tribes. But here we sit, massive post-industrial global America, and other countries as well, unable to function analytically or critically because of the top-down pressure not to do that. I mean, this has been written about so many times, novel after novel. Must I pick on 1984 again? But something's got to give, truth seekers. Something has got to give. Right? Let's do some phone calls here. Joe is calling from Atlanta. Joe, thanks for holding on.
Oh, my pleasure, Mike. Hi.
Hi.
We can get this out. First of all, I'm just a regular guy. I built a business as a diesel mechanic, did that for years, and was pretty successful at it. Enjoyed it, knock around guy. Way before Bush was ever running for president, even though I'm a relatively apolitical person, didn't follow it, didn't care, like most guys, you know, in my demographic. I just knew there was this guy out there that when Barry Sheck came out with the Innocence Project and the DNA evidence that, you know, a lot of innocent guys were on death row, that I remember hearing this one Texas governor, I had no idea who this guy was, this George Bush, saying that he literally knew from God anybody he was executing was guilty.
Yeah.
And it scared the hell out of me. And I said to myself, I'm never moving to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, I end up on with 8 years, you know, having to live under this guy. And I honestly believe, and I don't know why it's not pressed more, the man is not a psychologically stable man. I really don't believe anybody can say that. Any regular guy with common sense who's out in the workforce just has to be able to see it. The decisions and the rhetoric and his determination to
But they don't. If that were the case, Joe, we would never have gotten to this situation that we're in right now.
True.
You know, that's the part that is so disconcerting, so upsetting, so maddening, is that the average person apparently doesn't see how sick this bastard is. Now, yeah, 70% of us now don't like him because of his war, but what about all the other filth and destruction he's brought on us? You know?
Oh, exactly. He's killed the country. But I just wanted to get out briefly this, and I hope that I can. 5 years ago, I was stricken with bone marrow cancer. Let me tell you, I also had leukemia at the same exact time, and this was some of the most painful thing a guy can go through.
Yeah.
I was a foster parent. I had over 70 foster children. I was president of the largest nonprofit organization in Georgia, a father of four, including my oldest son is adopted, and my wife's an attorney and licensed in Connecticut, but we live in Georgia. Mm-hmm. But make a long story short, when I got sick, I went down real hard. I had a construction company at that time, and I lost my construction company. Literally, Mike, my house was falling off the foundation. We had to abandon the house. Every single thing in the house was taken over by toxic mold. If this sounds crazy, I could tell you, and you could see this, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution did a 2-page article about it. The point being that my medication was $1,600 a month. If I didn't come up with it, I was going to die. I was put on an oral chemotherapy that really saved my life. In addition to that, I was paying a $1,500 a month mortgage on a house that didn't exist anymore. Every trophy, every pencil, every book that my kids had was totally destroyed. Insurance covered absolutely nothing. And throughout the years since then, I've had gone to several different oncologists. And I have found that the most recent oncologist, for example, says, listen, I understand that you're in tremendous pain, but I just can't correlate it directly to cancer. I have one of the rarest cancers that there is. The Gleevec that I take for my cancer is what's called a non-approved use. I get it through the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. But the point is, I am in so much pain, Mike, I literally feel like I have broken bones in the tops of my feet. And I am at times in a wheelchair and at times on crutches. But my pain was fully controlled by Oxycontin that I first got. But now that the years have gone by, this lady, for example, who I'm seeing, fully cut off my medication. And her reasoning was, well, I can't directly relate your pain, although I know you have pain. I can see the gigantic golf ball-sized bumps growing out of your ankles and in the backs of your knees.
Your oncologist is saying this?
My oncologist will not prescribe it. She told me to go to a pain management clinic. I can verify this to you easily, and it would be fun for you to look at. And my wife would fax it to you tomorrow if you were interested. My wife called 8 different pain management clinics, and not one would make an appointment because I have cancer. So I am stuck living like an animal in the most egregious torture that you can imagine, in the humiliation. During the Super Bowl game, my little 8-year-old son barely touched my foot with his foot. It wrenched my foot not even an inch, and it brought me almost to tears, and it scared him so much by me screaming, he was crying. I am on no pain medicine until the 23rd, when I have one guy who is actually going to see me, but that leaves me hanging for 2 weeks. And since Rush Limbaugh, and since all of these people that have come out and abused these drugs have done that, and the war on drugs that Ronald Reagan instituted, people like myself who desperately need them literally to live, because another man as not as tough as I would have taken his life, believe me, I am not exaggerating.
I
cannot get the pain medication that I need to sustain myself. I cannot make a commitment to go to a dinner with a friend because I don't know if I'm going to be able to walk. It's torture, Mike. I mean to tell you, absolute torture. And I'm not the only one, and that's why I'm calling. It's a huge problem today. Doctors don't want to prescribe OxyContin because the DEA is looking over their shoulder. And they'll tell you right out, you have to understand my position. I don't understand your position. I don't care about your position. So that's another issue. And this is extremely important. I promise you, you'll be glad you listened to this.
Can you hold on?
Yeah, sure.
All right, just stay right there, Joe. When we come back, I want to hear the extremely important part. I got to take a break here. We're talking with Joe in Atlanta. Stay with us.
To Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It is 23 past the hour. We're talking to Joe in Atlanta, who has been talking to us here for several minutes about the situation he's been facing. Now, what was the other part you wanted to share with us, Joe?
Well, the other part, Mike, is my wife is a brilliant woman who put herself through law school, graduated in the top of her class, and passed the bar in Connecticut. My cancer developed when we lived in Georgia, again, 5 years ago. And again, literally, my house fell off the foundation. That was in the newspaper, two-page article. This does sound so bizarre. That's the reason I'm mentioning that to you. Point being, we were paying $1,500 for the mortgage and $1,600 for the medication. Without the medication, I would have died. I take an oral chemotherapy drug every single day. So my wife applied to take the Georgia bar at a point when she stopped making payments on the house because our entire family was living in one room with my sister-in-law. We were homeless. We could not live in a house that was structurally damaged. Right. And the Georgia bar, the Christians down here, the wonderful Christians in Georgia, told my wife that she was unfit to take the bar. She could not take the bar exam because she had not made the mortgage payments. And she said, well, we're not going to live in the house. We're going to litigate with the builder, the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been absolutely no mercy. But I'll tell you this. We have written to this White House, my daughter, my wife, myself, and begged them for a response, just a response. And people say, well, hey, it's the president. He's busy. Well, let me tell you, I wrote one letter to Bill Clinton when I was first sick, and my Social Security file was lost. And so they weren't going to approve it. They were going to take another 2 years to go over it. And I got a letter from Bill Clinton, believe it or not, and I still have it. And it was a letter starting a presidential inquiry into my problem. And he had then Secretary of Health and Human Services, Donna Shalala, call me herself on the phone, and my problem was resolved. Can you imagine this White House calling anybody? They won't even call the senators back who are trying to deal with those border guards who are being railroaded into jail. This guy is a criminal, and he will not help anybody. I can't get anybody to help me. My situation,
Joe,
is hopeless.
Joe, as you've been talking, I've gotten several emails here from people who want to get in touch with you. You're obviously listening to this program either on Sirius or the Internet. How are you listening?
Sirius.
You're listening. Well, you have a computer for sure, right?
Yes.
All right. If you will send me an email, just say, Mike, it's Joe from Atlanta. We talked. And let me forward to you some of these emails that I'm getting of people who might be able to, you never know. You never know. What door is going to open to, change things? So if you would, send me an email. So I've got your email address, and then I will forward to you the emails I'm getting from I won't forward you your email to anybody. I'll forward to you what I'm getting, and then you can contact these people via email as you see fit.
Yeah, there's no words to tell you how much I would appreciate that, because I just am now at the point where I'm getting back in the fight, and my new thing is I'm not going down anymore. So any help, any information, any moral support would be more than greatly appreciated. I got four little kids to take care of, Mike.
All right,
and I don't have a lot of years to do it.
I hear that, man.
So what was your email then?
MikeDMalloy@AOL.com. MikeDMalloy@AOL.com. Send me an email, Joe. All right, man. Thanks.
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Joe in Atlanta, if you're still listening, I haven't gotten your email yet, and I'm really getting a lot of responses here, so you may not. We may have cut you off before you got the address. MikeDMalloy@AOL.com. Mike D, like David, Malloy, M-A-L-L-O-Y. MikeDMalloy@AOL.com. Send me an email. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 folks who want to get in touch with you for whatever reason, and I will forward them to you. MikeDMalloy@AOL.com. Hi. It's just, you know, you have a conversation with somebody dealing with what Joe's dealing with, and that story can be retold, I'm sure, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of times over in this country, and it is just an outrage. Just an absolute outrage. We spend hundreds of billions of dollars on war, but somebody, or a thousand somebodies, or 100,000 somebodies are in desperate need of medication or help or whatever. And Joe's not pleading a charity case. He was just talking about what he deals with. And I can't get my mind around that. I just can't. I can't believe. Can you? I mean, of course I can. On a logical level, the man just sat here and told the story. But on an emotional or some other level, can you believe that this sort of thing goes on? And it goes on, and Joe's not unique. We know that. He knows that. Just one more story. Back to your phone calls. Jake is calling from Arcata, California, listening on KGOE out of Eureka. Hi, Jake.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's going okay. How about you?
I'm doing well. You know, I just want to talk to you real quick about the Scooter Libby trial. Here we have Dick Cheney in his own handwriting, basically implicating the president in leaking Valerie Plame's identity. It was George Bush's own father, George Bush Sr., who in a famous speech said that leaking the identity of a covert agent is akin to treason.
Yeah.
So I'd like to know what George Bush Sr. thinks of his traitorous son.
Probably figures that it was necessary in order to protect the oil companies, and in order to protect the oil companies, these people would do anything.
Yeah, they sure as hell would.
Oh,
and
yeah,
and I like what you were saying earlier. You know, you're basically laying it all out there for people. We need to ask ourselves this question. How come the government refuses to answer very simple, basic questions about what really happened on 9/11? Why did they take the steel beams, the crime scene where thousands of people were slaughtered, They destroyed a crime scene. I'm sorry, but that alone is cause for people like Rudy Giuliani to be put on trial, not to be put up for president.
Well, you get no argument from me about that particular topic. What has gone on during and immediately subsequent to the attack on this country, engineered, as far as I'm concerned, by, to some degree, by members of the Bush crime family, what has gone on since then has been nothing short of a treason, impeachable offenses, call it what you want. But one of the linchpins in making this happen is a free and dedicated press, a media that is dedicated to truth and justice and making life better. And we don't have that in this country. We haven't had that in this country for a number of years. And we're not going to get it back. It will exist on, I was saying earlier tonight, it'll exist on the internet. It'll exist in little pockets here and there. But the mainstream media that overwhelms people 24/7 simply will not take up the cause of justice. They will not. And that's the reason the people have to do something on their own. And that means massive, massive refusal to go along with what we're supposed to go along with, whether that's demonstrations or general strikes. And I just hope that we all get to that point before it's too damn late. I don't know.
Well,
what
yeah, before the war with Iran starts. And you're right about these journalists. I mean, these corporate so-called mainstream journalists who spend all their time sucking up to these politicians, kissing their butts, that they, you know, their jobs are on the line. If they tell the truth about these politicians, the awful truth about the Bush administration, they might lose their job. That's why they behave the way they do. And like you said, a lot of them are paid off. Armstrong, Williams, hell, I mean, the entire Fox Network is one giant propaganda channel for the Republican Party.
Sure,
you know,
is.
Yeah, it's just a disgrace, and the entire Bush administration is a disgrace, Mike, and they need to be impeached, and it's time that we tell our Democratic so-called representatives to do the right thing, to do what we want, what needs to be done to save our Constitution, and that is to remove Bush and Cheney. These people, Bush and Cheney, they have to go.
Well, you get no argument from me. Jake, thanks. You're a new caller, right?
Oh, yeah, I've called you a few times before.
Oh, though. Have you? Okay, well, you can listen over the air now. You're listening on KGOE, right?
That's right, yeah, 1480 KGOE here in Eureka.
Super. I hope you call again. Take care, okay?
Thanks, Mike. See
you. All right, Jake. Appreciate your call. Alex is calling from Chicago. Hey, Alex.
Hi. I love your show, first of all, but I would like to explain to you about 9/11, the demolition of Twin Towers.
Wait a minute. How involved are you, do you want to get? Because you know we're getting. Okay, go ahead.
No, not on that level.
Okay,
a
go ahead.
A year and a half before 9/11 happened, I saw that documentary on Discovery Channel about tallest building in the world.
Right.
And there was like 15 minutes about Twin Towers.
Right.
The way they were built. So basically. After a couple of years after they were built, a first storm hit New York, Manhattan.
Yeah.
The wind was blowing about 60 miles per hour.
Right.
And engineers were really concerned about a really heavy storm around 100 miles per hour because those buildings, they would fall and basically destroy half of the Manhattan because they will fall on the side. What they did to fix the problem, somehow they managed to extend the foundation a couple stories down, and they put a huge bell on top of each building. So basically when wind is blowing west, this huge bell moves east. To keep the balance of the building.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, they count that wind over 135 miles per hour.
Right.
Anyway, they won't fall. They will fall anyway. So that there was another problem falling on the side, destroying half of the Manhattan. So they wired dynamite into the walls of first five floors. So when they demolish it, the buildings will go straight down. But and I remember that reporter asked the question of
okay, Alex, I don't want to be crazy or be impolite to you, but what is the point you're trying to make here?
They were destroyed by dynamite.
Oh, okay. Well, I think most
into the walls.
Yeah, I think most people who listen to this program are completely in agreement with you on that one, Joe. I really do. And let me move on, because it's one of those cases of preaching to the choir. I'm not saying that everyone who listens to this program believes that Bush was directly responsible or even indirectly responsible, but I think everyone who listens to this program pretty much believes that the official story put out by the Bush crime family is not the truth. Now, what the truth is, chances are you and I and the rest of America will never know. All right? All right. Thanks thanks for checking in, pal. Gary is calling from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Gary, welcome to the program.
You know, it's hard to follow Joe's story in that one.
Yeah, I know.
It could be repeated over and over, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I could share with you a story, but I won't take the time just about like that. Not from my own experience, but from a family member's experience. What I called about was regarding media consolidation, that issue. What do you make of the fact that one of the satellite stations or companies is dropping C-SPAN and putting in more sports channels? Do you read anything into that? I was a 61-year-old. I used to be pretty accepting of everything that went on. I've grown to become a cynical skeptic of everything.
Well, good. That's about the only way you can survive. What do I think of what? Dropping
Well, the station I listen, the channel I listen to Sirius, is on the 14th next week, dropping C-SPAN.
Yeah.
The only access, other than this particular network that I listen to you on, of getting anything halfway truthful.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder what the significance is. It's almost like there's a plan out there to minimize the ability that any of us have of finding truth or knowing what truth is.
All right, now you're talking about Sirius satellite radio doing this?
Yep.
Well, see, that's a whole different situation. That is a subscription service. And frankly, I got to be honest with you, I don't see any problem with Sirius doing that. And I don't say that because they carry us, but I'd say the same thing about XM.
Well, they have the right to do that.
Yeah, well, they're not. And plus, they're not the public airwaves. Sirius satellite is a subscription service that is not the public airwaves. Now, if you said to me that a radio station in your neighborhood was dropping all, you know, public a public radio or liberal talk in order to put on country western music, then I would be upset. But I can't get upset about that, Gary. Gary, I got to leave it there, pal. Thanks a lot for checking in. I appreciate your comments.
They say that we are free and we must fight to be number one. So when the army calls, I'll grab my TV, my car, and my gun. And the TV god watches over me, opens up my eyes.
About 8:30 before the hour. Thanks to Billy Foster, who engineered the program in Phoenix for us tonight. Also, Billy answered the calls. Thanks, Billy. Our senior correspondent is Chris in Minnesota. Mark Marshall is our webmaster. And the militant mods at MikeMolloy.com deserve a pat on the back or a kick in the ass, one of the two. Thanks, everybody. K Catherine Bay is the executive producer of this program. And don't forget, we need you, desperately need you, to go to NovaMradio.com and sign up for downloads and podcasts and all sorts of good stuff and a chance to participate in this drawing. I'm not sure what the number is right now, how many people have signed up. We need 5,000 founding members. And I personally am really counting on folks to do this. So if the spirit moves you, please do so. D.B. Cooper, who jumped out of an airplane 25 years ago, is calling from West Michigan. Hey, D.B.
Hi. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Oh, I guess I can't complain. I'm keeping the wood fire burning, and it's like cold as a witch's whatever.
Yeah, well, where do you live in Western Michigan? Do you live in Northwestern or West Central?
Take a straight line from Muskegon, go east.
Yeah.
Muskegon straight north of Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
We're right up there.
Oh, my God. Well, it's going to get worse before it gets better. You know that.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate that.
You know, my good friend Peter Werby, who lives in Detroit, and
yep.
With whom I chat at least once every week or so,
uh-huh.
Was telling me that the weather up there has just been just mind-numbing.
Exactly. Yes, it has been. It's like you can't breathe without the hairs in your nose are going to break when you take a deep breath.
I used to live in Toledo, Ohio. That's why I live in Atlanta, Georgia now.
Oh, I don't blame you, Mike.
I wouldn't do it again. See, but that's not why you really called.
No, of course not. And I did speak with Peter about this last night because I don't remember which show it was that I heard. But it was on Air America, bless your hearts.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, it's about, I think it was Randy Rose that was ranting about this, which she's really good at.
Right.
But, yeah, why did Kerry concede so easily in 2004?
No spine, no guts, no determination.
How about skull and bones?
Nah, I don't buy into that. To me, Skull and Bones is a Yaley secret little society. Jesus, I'm a member of a secret society that's based in Napoleon, Michigan, which I doubt you know where it is.
Golly, I guess I don't know.
All right. Well, it's about as secret as Skull and Bones. And what we do is once every 10 years get together and drink beer and laugh about our little secret society. I just don't buy. I don't buy the Skull and Bones conspiracy.
All right.
I don't. I know a lot of people do, and that's all right with me.
Well, yeah.
You know, but as far as Kerry conceding, I think it was because he just didn't have the
spine.
The spine to do it. The guts.
Right.
The viscera necessary to fight these evil sons of bitches. That's all. And it does take a certain kind of courage.
Okay. Well, you know, Mike, I'll just take your word on that, and I'll stop whining about it then.
Okay. Thanks, DB. Take care.
All right. I'll save a little bit of that burnt money for you.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you, DB. You all remember that story, DB Cooper, the guy that more or less hijacked a domestic flight in the United States and demanded, what did he demand, Kathy, $2-3 million and a parachute, two parachutes? Bailed out with the money somewhere over the western United States and they never found anything. Well, we know where he is. He lives in western Michigan, draw a straight line east from Muskegon, which is just north of Grand Rapids. And there's D.B. Cooper. We don't have to worry about the feds being on the way because that's the fourth or fifth time that DB has shared that with us. All right, let's see if we can squeeze in another phone call here. James is calling from, where are you calling from, James?
I'm calling from Minneapolis.
Hey, James.
Is this Mike?
Yes, it is.
My goodness, I can't believe it. The last time we talked, I got to know, I just want to let you know, I'm signed up. Had problems with the website, but I talked to somebody at the station today, and goodness, I'm a founding member still, even though the February 5th deadline has passed.
Well, thank you.
And I really love this. You know, I'm so glad you're there because my station, Stupid Network Affiliate here, don't do it anymore. And they broadcast everything delayed, the ones that they do.
Well, we are going to be back on in Minneapolis.
Really?
Yeah, we're going to be on midnight till 3. When does it start, Kathy?
Really?
February 19th, I believe.
Wow. Well, I guess a live feed anyway, because I finally got a crummy blowout computer for, you know, that can actually pick you up. And I haven't been able to do it for so long. I started doing it in December, and I've been just in seventh stage of birth.
Seventh someplace.
I won't say that. I don't believe in that other place.
James, we're flat out of time. You're going to have to call
me
tomorrow
night. Thanks a lot.
All right, call me tomorrow night. We'll talk then. Thanks a lot, James. I appreciate it. Y'all take care. I have Joe's email now, so I will forward what you have sent to me to our caller from Atlanta, Joe. And if you haven't sent an email yet, send it. I'll send it on to him if you want me to. Take care, all right? Keep it lit. I'll see you tomorrow night. I'm Mike Malloy.